Well, I'm here with Dougal Beddingfield, the assistant coach for Japan, just asking him a few questions about the setup back home.
Good to be here.
So, what does being an assistant coach for an associate country, especially specifically Japan, actually entail? Like, what's your job description?
Good question. So our coaching setup is a little bit different from most other countries at the moment. So we get a lot of support from Cricket Victoria, and they send various coaches over from time to time to Japan to work with our teams. And for big tournaments such as this one, we get some coaching support. So they'll fly over a coach who's either a full-time employee at Cricket Victoria or involved in some way at some level with Cricket Victoria. And so where I come in is I'm an employee of Japan Cricket Association, have been for 4 years. My role's not specifically as a coach, but as a community cricket manager. But I guess I'm the guy who's always around the squad and can provide some consistency with the messages over a long period of time and develop more of a long-term strategy and set more long-term goals for the team and be able to monitor players over a longer period of time also.
And you mentioned that connection with Cricket Victoria. How did that start?
I think it was a few years ago. The ICC through the East Asia Pacific office in Melbourne helped set up that partnership. So Cricket Victoria has been sending over people for a number of years now and doing a lot of the local junior development stuff, school visits, helping with our Cricket Blast junior program, that kind of thing, and more recently sending over some good people to help out with our high performance program as well. I think some of the other East Asia Pacific countries had partnerships set up with the other states in Australia. For example, I think Cricket Western Australia was with, I can't remember who it was, might have been Indonesia, I'm probably getting this wrong, Cricket New South Wales might have been linked with Korea, something like that. It's probably not the exact right
way. There's partnerships.
I'm not sure if those relationships are still going or not, but our relationship with Cricket Victoria we see as mutually beneficial and it's still going strong, so we're very, very happy to have that relationship.
So what does Victoria get out of this? Is it a more an altruistic sort of relationship?
In a sense, yeah. And the thing is that all of these people from Cricket Victoria have come to Japan. Often they'll spend between 3 and 6 weeks in Japan. They have a really good experience a lot of the time. Yeah. So from a professional development perspective, it's an advantage. It's a good opportunity for a lot of the staff at Cricket Victoria. I guess a lot of the Cricket Victoria people, Cricket Victoria is a huge organisation. Their roles are very specialised as well. So it also provides new experiences going into an associate country where cricket's not established and making a difference there. I think they get a real sense of satisfaction out of that and the professional development through working in a non-English speaking country as well is really good for them. So in a sense it's altruism, but it's also
they certainly get
a lot out of it or they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. And so how's your Japanese then?
I can communicate fairly effectively, I guess, in Japanese. I've spent a total of 9 years in Japan. The first 4 years were not in a cricket job.
Yeah.
And the four and a half years now at Japan Cricket, so I can certainly communicate in Japanese. I wouldn't call my Japanese good.
Effective.
But it's pretty situational and I get my point across pretty well in a number of different environments. So yeah.
That's good. So back to the domestic scene over in Japan. What's the, I guess, structure like? Like, are there provincial teams? Is it mainly club-based? Like, what's the...
Yeah, so the main challenge for cricket in Japan, or one of the big challenges, is grounds. If you've ever been to Tokyo, you've got this image in your mind of kind of concrete jungle, and the chances of convincing your local government to give you a piece of land big enough to construct a cricket ground are absolutely zero. So we need to look outside the major cities. So we've got six grounds now in Sano, which is about an hour's drive north of Tokyo. And the outskirts of the bigger Tokyo metropolis is where you'll find some of our grounds, and that's where most of our leagues are based. So all of the players you see here in our national squad, or out of the 14, I think 12 of them will be living around Tokyo, and they'll be playing in our Japan Cricket League 40 over competition. Most of the games are in Sana, and they'll also play in our Japan Cup 2020 competition as well. We've divided, so Kanto is the region around Tokyo. We've divided that into north, south, east, west. So they're all also representing their regions as well, playing in what we call the Japan Premier League 2020. So they get plenty of domestic cricket. The standard is getting better and better every year. There's a lot of expats, of course, in Japan, particularly Indian, Pakistan, Sri Lankan, Bangladesh community, who make up a lot of our playing numbers at senior men's level, and the standard of our competitions is getting better and better every year, along with now having some pretty good facilities in Sanok to hold decent cricket matches. We've got turf wickets now at the
International Grounds. Yeah, I've seen the cricket centre. It looks good.
Yeah, so the Sanok local government, the federal government also chipped in a bit, but it came to about $5 million to upgrade the Sanok International Cricket Ground from what was a kind of a, what you'd call a park ground, I guess, to a ground which is now two grounds, and the outfield has excellent drainage, very nice playing surface. We've got the wicket table, we can bring up nine turf wickets on our ground one and seven on ground two, so set up to really be able to host international tournaments, which we'll be doing from next May. We host the East Asia Pacific qualifiers for the Under-19 World Cup.
Yes, yeah, I saw that. It was announced a little while ago. Yeah.
So it's, even in the 4 years I've been at Japan Cricket, if you look back to 4 years ago and compare it to now, everything's better. So, grounds and the standard of our leagues as well.
So, how does that feed into the professional setup? Or is it professional? What's the level of professionalism? Are there contracts, that sort of thing?
For our national,
yeah,
our national squads, no, certainly not professional yet. And again, that's another one of our challenges, I guess, competing at this level. So we do play against other countries whose players are on what you call professional, semi-professional contracts, or even just getting a bit of money to help them out, subsidise them, getting the training and around to play all their cricket. So our players actually pay to play for our national team, which these days I think is a bit of a rarity. I think it was more the case 15 years ago for a few countries, but we're still at that point now. So these guys are all paying a small amount.
Has that led to a bit of churn with the players as they sort of get jobs and
No, that's right. So we get drop-offs at about three different points in our kind of age, I guess, our pathway. So kids finishing primary school, going into junior high school, there's a big drop-off there. It actually picks up again when they enter university, because cricket's still a university sport in Japan, and the university kids get a lot of free time. if they want to play cricket. But then the transition from university to getting a job in Japan is a huge thing. And yeah, we lose players at that point when they're, say, 22, around the age of 22, I guess. So we've probably lost one player from our squad this year who got his graduated and got a job, and he's found it difficult to strike a balance between a full-time career and playing cricket.
Yeah.
So that's one example of a guy who was probably in our best 11 who we've lost.
And are there any sort of plans in the works to try and combat this, or is it just a case of needing more money?
Yeah, more money would be great, yeah. So, yeah, it does come down to money and our priorities, the way we want to spend our money. So we've still got a lot of things that we want to spend money on, such as strengthening our junior participation programs, putting money into facilities, that kind of thing. So in terms of helping our players a bit more financially, something I'd love to see happen. I don't know if it'll happen in the short term though.
Yeah.
I'm probably not the right person to ask on that one.
So are there any, I guess, attempts to get government funding into it? Because you mentioned they chipped in with the ground, but is there any more like ongoing stuff? Or?
Yeah, so we've been getting support through Sanno City. So Sanno's the main centre of cricket in Japan. And the relationship with Sanno City is really strong. So there's something called the Sanno Cricket Town Project. And the aim of that project is to bring as much cricket to Sanno City as possible, and in turn helping helping bring a bit more business and interest to the city of Sanno. Sanno, like a lot of other cities in Japan outside of the main urban areas, has a declining population and young people leaving the town, that kind of thing. So they're looking for new ideas. So yeah, we have received good local government support. The federal government support was for the ground project was good. It's not something we can rely on though, I don't think. So we're looking to source more revenue from corporate sponsorship, things like that. That's been one of our focuses the last 12 months. We've managed to get on board a new sponsor for our
give
national
a plug.
Men's team, K-Sara. I've got on board with our men's team. You can see the Q.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was.
Q on the cap, Q for K-Sara.
K-Sara.
Yeah. K-Sara-Sara.
What do they do?
They do a... Whoa, that's a big hit. Is he going to get that?
Yeah, it's into the net.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
it's a big play. Now he caught it and he had to go over the line and he threw it back in. So that'll be one run, I think.
Yeah.
That was
a good effort, yeah.
It was a great effort, wasn't it?
Been peppering that square boundary. Quite short. Yeah, sorry, I was giving a K-Sara a plug.
I think they do a lot of things, K-Sara. One of those companies who...
Yeah. Fingering a lot of pies.
Fingering a few pies and... really glad to have their support.
Yeah, no worries.
I think that there was a link there with K-Sara having business ties in India.
Yes.
I think that cricket might be a good sport to get involved in. Getting involved in with a national team was something they wanted to do, and they decided cricket was a good fit for them. Yeah.
So just on that India point, you mentioned there are quite a few expats in the domestic leagues.
Yeah.
But the team is almost entirely local Japanese. Is that a conscious selection policy, or is it just the best guys happen to be Japanese?
Yeah, it's a selection policy. So the new, you can see, I guess, with a couple of the teams out there in this tournament, Philippines have got a lot of expats in their team. Korea, I guess for the first time, I think have brought in about 4 or 5 expats into their squad for this tournament.
Yeah, interesting development.
The ICC has relaxed that a little bit over the last 12 months. So it's pretty simple now. I guess if you have residency in a country for 3 years and you're playing in that domestic league for three seasons, yeah, you're eligible to play for that country. That's my understanding of the recently revised eligibility criteria. Now, that previously there was a separate issue to that, which was ICC funding.
Yeah. So yeah, they changed this.
You'd be familiar with the ICC scorecard system, which is linked to your grants. So there was something called local development, which meant that the ICC were encouraging you to select players who had grown up and learnt their cricket in that particular country. And 20% of the scorecard was based purely on that.
Yeah.
So, we did have we did get probably punished for financially anyway for selecting expats over the last 3 or 4 years, and it's not an easy one. I'm sure just about every country's had conversations regarding what their own selection policy should be. You'd have a different opinion to the next person if you go and live in a country for three years. Should you be able to play for that country or not?
Pretty conflicted.
Is it good for that country to have a three-year resident going straight into the national team when you've got guys who have learnt their cricket in that country?
That's always the trade-off of moving up in the divisions versus...
Sure, you might have someone who comes for work for 3 years and plays cricket for that country for a couple of years and then leaves, goes back. So is that good for the long-term development of the team? So there are all these conversations that need to be had. At the end of those conversations, about 3 or 4 years ago, we decided to go with all Japanese squad. In the short term, our results weren't particularly good. We knew it was going to take time, so we're playing a lot better cricket now than we were 2 years ago, that's for sure. And we've started with two wins in this tournament, so we've fingers crossed we can keep going. And that's with a team of 14 guys who have all grown up in Japan and all learned their cricket in Japan. We're still having the conversations around where do we go from here. So we've got at least a couple of expat players playing in our leagues who we think would add something to our squad, absolutely. There's also guys, and you see with the Philippines, Smith, Tyler, Russ, Hill,
Cowing.
Yeah, so those guys have spent most of their lives in Australia.
Filipino parents.
One Filipino parent, passport probably, I guess. And they've added value to the Philippines team, no doubt. And we've got at least one or two that type of player too.
Over in Australia?
Yeah. Who are quality players and would certainly also add something to our squad. So, that's internal decision making that we've got to
keep
work out what's
maybe,
best for our long term future.
A couple of the this is going back a little while, but a few of the Dutch players sort of used the Netherlands as a springboard to get some attention international selectors. Do you think you might kind of be able to lure them in that way, or would that mutually beneficial?
I don't think it's a matter of luring players. I think that there's I think the lure would just be playing international cricket. Like a tournament like this is fantastic for any player, I would have thought.
Yeah.
So I don't think they'd be specifically using it to launch as a springboard for playing for Australia or something like that. I think a kind of Australian-based Japanese Australian guys, a couple of those guys would just love to play for Japan first and foremost. But we'll see how that pans out, I guess.
So in your job as assistant coach, which I think you mentioned was sort of temporary because you've got juggling a lot of lot of roles at the moment. But have you, what are some, I guess, maybe more technical aspects that you've been focusing on sort of like to improve in the guys' games?
Yeah, good question. I felt that probably 12 months ago, I try to be pretty honest to the boys that our fielding wasn't where it needed to be. So we spoke about things like a tournament such as this, Japan doesn't have to be the team that hits the most sixes. We don't have to be the team that has the most fast bowlers. But we do have to do things better than every other team in the tournament. One of those is we need to be the best fielding team in the tournament if we're going to win the tournament. We need to be the best running between wickets team if we're going to win the tournament. And those two things in particular, I felt 12 months ago that they weren't where they needed to be. Even in the first game against Indonesia, those two aspects weren't particularly great. And yesterday, I think we nailed those two. And the five basic things that we wanted to do better than every other team that we play in, and we did those five things particularly well yesterday. I think we beat Philippines in those five areas, and we won the game by just five runs.
Yeah, exciting finish. Century crusher to finish it off with six needed off the last. Yeah, great finish.
So, for example, yesterday's game, Korea hit seven sixes and we hit three sixes. But if you look at the percentage of balls scored off, we scored off 61% of deliveries, they scored off 54% of deliveries. So that's an area we have to be better than the other team, and we were yesterday, because we gave up four sixes compared to them. That's 24 runs extra they've got, so we have to beat them in a few other areas.
Yeah.
And there are, I guess, the Japanese mentality, the team is the most important thing, so there's things that we can do better as a team than the opposition. And it might not be the case that one of our players comes out and hits 10 sixes and win the game, but we need contributions from all 11 of our players if we're going to win. I felt like we got that yesterday.
It's interesting you're saying that, because I remember talking to Jeremy Bray from Denmark.
Yeah.
He was saying a lot of the same things of controlling the variables, playing for the team, being, you know, tight-knit, fielding well because that's something you can control, and all those things. And it seems like that does make a big difference at this level.
Yeah, and my thinking was that those things are something that Japanese naturally buy into as well. They're very good at wanting to put the team above the individual. So cricket's a team sport played by individuals,
yeah,
right?
So that's an interesting.
Sometimes individual brilliance will win you a game of cricket, and that's fine. But there are also games of cricket where if you get 11 players really working together and following all the team rules, the team plans, that in a close game, that team will fall over the line. Mm-hmm. So we're not doing anything that hasn't been done before, but I think with the Japanese team first mentality, there's a lot of things that we can say that will. The whole team will buy into and will help us win games.
So talking about the culture, what's the situation on the ground with cricket and the Japanese consciousness? Like, is it kind of just a blip on the radar? Or because I remember as Ireland were kind of making their way up, they put a big focus on getting cricket into the mainstream. You guys got any plans to do that? Like, what are you getting up to with that?
Yeah, it's a slow burner. We're certainly not in the mainstream yet in Japan, so cricket is still what you call a minor sport in Japan. So when I talk to Japanese people and they say, "Oh yeah, I think I know what cricket is," and I say, "Yeah, it's actually the second most popular sport in the world behind soccer," and no one believes me. like soccer, and then you got cricket and basketball, you know.
Yeah.
Basketball claims that they're second, but we'll say cricket second. So there's certainly a lack of understanding about what cricket is.
Do they think it's croquet?
Well, I have been into local city offices before talking about cricket and have them say, no, you can't play cricket in our town, there's nowhere to keep your horses, that kind of
interesting. Bertus de Jong was saying that the Dutch people sometimes think it's polo as well.
You can't bring your horses onto this ground. Okay, we won't. We promise.
Yeah.
Promise we won't bring our horses on. There's a few little probably cliches or stereotypes that people might have heard of about cricket, like it goes for 5 days. I guess people know that it's a bat and ball sport that goes for 5 days.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we do have to have a lot of, there has to be a lot of explaining about what cricket is. And even when we're hosting a Japan national team match in Sano, we have kind of a loudspeaker with a person kind of half commentating on the match and describing what actually happened.
Explaining what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, why did they hit the ball there and run to the other end, for example? The ball just flew over the ropes. What does that mean? That's six runs. That's good, right? So they're explaining all that in Japanese at the ground. So we're hoping that, first of all, cricket becomes a really popular sport in our designated cities of cricket, such as Sano and Akishima and Sanmu and a few other places around Japan. And then from there it can kind of spread even further.
Yeah.
So the cities of cricket are quite important to our overall strategy. Not trying to just suddenly make cricket the most popular sport in Japan. I mean, you have to first of all build
from the ground up, yeah.
Build and target, really target little areas where you can do that initially, and hopefully develop some good bases from which cricket can expand even further.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was talking to one of the Filipino guys and they were saying the same thing is going on here with Das Marinas, because it's a bit outside Manila.
Yeah.
So the land issue, similar with Manila, Tokyo.
Yeah,
And they're trying to make Das Marinas a cricket centre as a bit of a point of difference. So it's interesting that this strategy seems to be being adopted.
Yeah, this part of the world, this is my first time in the Philippines, but I know it's not a huge country and Manila's a big city, so they'd have the same issues as we do. Hong Kong.
Yeah, same thing.
You'd know about
land,
Hong Kong.
Land at a premium.
Land, China, Korea were quite lucky with being able to host the Asian Games in 2014. The ground in Incheon, I think it's a wonderful ground. I don't know if you've been there yet, but...
No, I've never been to Korea, actually.
Yeah, you must go. Incheon, lovely ground. That was a legacy from the Asian Games.
Yeah.
And that was a big boost for Korea cricket. Another challenge that we have in Japan, I think Korea exactly the same, but cricket's not an Olympic sport.
Yeah, I was going to say, how important is those multi-sport tournaments, especially the Olympics?
Yeah, there were the Olympic Games is placed as the highest possible sporting endeavour, really, in a number of countries, certainly in Japan. So the Japan Olympic Committee is quite a powerful organisation. So if you're not an Olympic sport, it sets you back a little bit.
Yeah.
You have to be creative. And the Olympics is linked to the Asian Games also, so cricket being in the Asian Games is also really important as well.
Yeah.
Asian Games were hosted in Jakarta this year, and cricket was not included for the first time in a while, and that was a big disappointment for a few countries, not least of all for Korea. It really, really hurt them, because I think their players were on contracts which were linked to the Korean Olympic Committee, and they were working on 4-year cycles towards each Asian Games. And their funding took a real hit.
Yeah.
So I think you'd have to ask them about it, but their players were on contracts, and now I don't think they are. So.
Just on that funding point, quite a few countries have like quite a lot of funding set aside for specifically Olympic sports.
Yeah.
Do you know like rough ballpark figures how much cricket might be looking at if they manage to get into the Olympics?
I don't know what the figures would be. You put me on the spot there. That's a great question again. I know we would get significant assistance though if overnight cricket became an Olympic sport. I think a number of countries would benefit. I don't think India would benefit from it. So
yeah, well, that's...
that might be holding things back. I'm not sure.
Well, at the moment it's the wider issue that they're... Yeah, but that's another issue entirely.
Yeah. Well, we've got an opportunity now in Japan too. So the this year's Asian Games, I guess, was a disappointment that cricket couldn't be in it. There's another Asian Games in 2022, which is will be hosted in... I've lost it, I think, China somewhere.
Yes.
And
but 2028's in Japan.
2026 will be hosted in Nagoya, in Japan. So our CEO, Alex Miyagi, has been spending a bit of time in Nagoya over the last 12 months. We obviously need to look at that region of Japan because there's a huge opportunity. If say, they can build a lovely cricket stadium there, as they did in Incheon for the Asian Games.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So you never know what their plans might be, though. So they might be looking at building a great stadium and then ripping it down straight after the tournament. So we've got to do a lot of groundwork there to convince the wider population around Nagoya that cricket's a great sport.
Yeah, and the value of it,
the
I guess.
The 2026 Asian Games can be, again, a legacy for cricket in that region.
So just on the Asian Games, are you guys able to influence the decision at all? Like, are you lobbying the Asian Games Committee in any way? Or, like, how does that all go down? Or is that sort of at the ICC level?
Yeah, the ICC will certainly do some lobbying there. I think you can certainly put your case forward. So I'm not sure about the decision-making process, really, about which sports get included in the Asian Games, which don't, whether it's the host nation, whether they can logistically put it on, or the tournament organisers. I'm not sure how the decisions get made, but I know there was a lot of lobbying going on from the ICC, from Korean Cricket Association, the Indonesian Cricket Association, to ultimately unsuccessfully on this occasion. It's a bit of I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly how the decisions get made. Oh, that's a close one. Not out.
No interest. Yeah. Just going back to on the field cricket. So it seems pretty well established in Sanon. What are the ways you're trying to replicate that? You said there are a few other cricket cities. And can you try and get into schools, what's the entry point for cricket in these towns?
Yeah, there's no one-size-fits-all model for it. So in Akishima is a little city west, it's in West Tokyo, I guess, Akishima. So our strategy there was, to get into schools. So, Bebe Miyagi, one of our players, scored 49 yesterday. He's a Japan cricket employee, and he's been based in Akishima for the last 5 years, I'm going to say. And he's done a really good job there getting into schools and developing a great relationship with the Board of Education in that town. Japanese government and bureaucracy is...
Legendary,
yeah. So we might have a good relationship with, say, Board of Education, but then there's the sports department, the grounds people, the mayor. So there's a lot of different
So you guys need to do a lot of, I guess, relationship building.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes there's a city, Sumu, in Chiba, which is east of Tokyo, a new city of cricket for us. And they actually came to us and asked us about cricket. The Tokyo Olympics 2020, the Sri Lankan Olympic team are basing themselves in Sumu, this town, in the lead up to the Olympic Games. So Sumu being pretty forward thinking, thought, what's the most popular sport in Sri Lanka? It's cricket. Let's get in contact with the Japan Cricket Association. Can we help you bring cricket to our town? But now we have a ground in Sumu. So the ground's there first. Now what do we do next? The next step is hopefully getting into schools. Yeah. Whereas in Akashima, on the opposite side of Tokyo, is the opposite side. We don't have a proper ground yet, but we've got a good foothold in the schools. So I'd say, I mean, those two things are the keys. Access to facilities, whether it's grounds or even just small training facilities or areas where people can play little indoor cricket, social forms of cricket, and also trying to get kids playing cricket. So those two things would be starting points, absolutely.
A couple more questions. The ICC recently changed restrictions around T20 international status.
Yeah.
How has that sort of, has that changed any of your plans, or has it brought anything forward, or like, has that affected you guys?
Personally, I think it's fantastic and overdue.
Yeah.
I think it's it's good because it will act as an incentive and get associate member boards a little bit more proactive in arranging little tournaments by themselves or bilateral series. So
you guys got any in the works or?
Yeah, well, so even before the T20 international status, we came up with the East Asia Cup, which has been going for 4 years now.
Oh yeah, with Hong Kong,
China, Hong Kong, Korea.
Yes,
so at the moment, it's a women's tournament 1 year and a men's tournament the next. So, and the host country is rotated between the four countries. With the Hong Kong team, we're not playing the full Hong Kong team because they're probably a level above the other three. We're playing the Hong Kong Dragons, which is their all-Chinese team. And they've been at a competitive level. For the most recent tournament, the Hong Kong Dragons Chinese team made the final against Japan, so they're going well in Hong Kong and bringing the sport to mainstream Chinese audience as well. So we felt that we needed more cricket outside of the ICC tournaments that we get anyway, but I think this T20I status will encourage that even further. I mean, we've just been talking internally about wanting to host a bilateral series next year against maybe one of the other teams in our region, and even talking about innovative concepts like they bring their men's and women's team at the same time, and we actually play a men's T20I and a women's T20I on grounds next to each other. And I don't know if that's happened before or not, but yeah.
They have been doing that a lot, I guess, in full member countries. They often have the women as like a curtain raiser sort of thing.
Yeah, as a curtain raiser, yeah. So that's one idea, or playing them at the same time.
Simultaneously
could be another idea. So yeah, we're throwing around ideas and we're hoping to host at least one bilateral series next year. In addition to the East Asia Cup and what the ICC are providing as well. So I think the more international cricket you actually play, the more exposure you're getting, and that acts as promotion for the sport as well.
Sure.
So you're not just talking about improving your national team, you're talking about promoting the sport, right? So.
And with the 50-over game, we've seen the new, pathway to the World Cup revealed. Has that changed? Like, if you guys, are you still trying to get back into that pathway at all, or you've?
It's an interesting pathway, in inverted commas, because I'm not sure there is a pathway for us.
Well, yeah. What are you guys outside that top, the Challenger leagues, and like, how do you get into that? Like, how does that affect your planning now?
Well, I mean, that document just arrived on my on my desk a couple of weeks ago, so I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, what it means firstly, but it, to me it looked like we don't actually have a pathway for the 50 over World Cup unless we are one of the top four ranked T20 countries outside a certain group of countries. You'd probably be able to explain
it. Seems a bit
better than me, or
putting the qualification to the 50 over game based on 2020 results, which seems a bit odd.
I think the ICC need to look at FIFA as an example of, I mean, FIFA gets criticised all the time for a variety of things, but at the end of the day, FIFA offers a pathway every 4 years for every single country in the world to not just compete in, but win the World Cup.
Oh, mate, you're preaching to the choir here, mate. I cannot agree more.
Yeah, I understand the ICC wants to promote 2020 cricket as the main form of cricket for associate countries. That's okay, but
it's,
I think there's still a place for 50 over cricket, and there certainly needs to be some kind of pathway there.
Yeah.
So we'd like to probably continue playing it, at least for our men's team, I would think. So, for example, if we host a bilateral series, we might be able to squeeze 150 over game in there, at least as well. I thought it was a little bit disappointing that we might not even get a chance to compete at that level.
Couple more questions. So you mentioned the women's game.
Yeah.
We're here for a men's tournament, but what's the lay of the land with the women's team at the moment? What are you guys
Our women's team?
Yeah.
Yeah. We've still got our squad. Same with the men. We put together a squad of 20 players every year, and we have training sessions. It's been a quiet year for the girls, not really having any ICC tournaments.
Fallow year, I believe they call it.
Yeah. Is it a gap year? I don't know. We've got a lot of new faces in our squad, so we're rebuilding. I guess our women's team were quite strong about 5 years ago, and we had a lot of girls retire, as is sometimes the case. And
similar thing to the men's, like getting jobs and moving on, or like?
Yeah, we've probably had a few girls in their 20s, 25, 28, who already had jobs, but they'd just retired from cricket, probably got to around 30, and we had a really strong group around that age who have just retired, I guess, at a similar time, so we had to bring a lot of new faces in, and it's a rebuilding. I guess a main focus is almost to be getting more girls actually playing the sport and participating in our domestic leagues. We don't want to just focus on training up 11 good players, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, I was talking to Jane Liversey, and she was talking about how one of her big priorities is getting cricket to women and girls, and that's like a big focus,
sure,
at least in her region.
Sure.
Are you guys got any specific projects, or is it just like send it into schools and see what happens, or like...
Yeah, so our main participation drive, the Cricket Blast for primary school kids, is obviously for boys and girls. So we're trying to get just as many girls playing as boys. From there, I mean, keeping in the sport's really important. So we're not flooded with female participants in cricket in Japan at the moment. We've got a few ideas on how to get more girls playing, but we it's a lot of trial and error with what we're doing, and we need to come up with a successful formula for each stage of the pathway, which we probably haven't nailed yet.
So what are some of the ideas floating around?
talking about different formats, I guess, our top domestic female leagues, do we change the playing conditions? Is there a way we can make it more appealing to your average player, so it's not just one girl making 100 and taking 5 wickets and the other other 10 watching? How do we make it a really appealing sport to young girls? So we're still
still at the drawing
still
board.
Still tossing around a lot of ideas, yeah. We're keen to look at what other countries have done too. Australia have done a wonderful job with what they've done in the past few years, and the Women's Big Bash is a shining example of what can be done with women's cricket. We're not Australia though, we have to look at what they've done, but what's
Hong Kong's doing a lot of good work as well.
They've done some great stuff, absolutely. So a lot of the things, a lot of their experiments have worked quite well. They've had some pretty smart people over there for a number of years, Hong Kong cricket, so we love looking at what they've done, and if we can copy a successful formula, we will.
Last question, bit of a downer, but we've seen there's been the Al Jazeera documentary and a few associate players suspended for corruption.
Yeah.
And so I guess what does Cricket Japan do in terms of anti-corruption stuff? Or is it mainly relying on the ICC, or do you guys have your own stuff going on there?
Yeah, it's something we're aware of, certainly. And one of the players who unfortunately is one of the recent guys who's been suspended was our liaison officer for a tournament.
That's not good.
About 3 years ago, and he was a lovely guy, just a fantastic fella, we thought, and just shows it's anyone's kind of susceptible.
Well, especially with this level and there's not too much money floating around.
Yeah, I think the level we're playing at the moment is possibly a level below what's going to be targeted for corruption, but we need to be very aware that the higher we go up, which we hope to do, it's going to become an issue.
Yeah, so it's something you need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, the ICC had an anti-corruption meeting, got all the teams in at the start of this tournament, so it's probably the first time our boys have listened to an ICC person actually talk about this kind of stuff, and just bringing it into their minds that if some strange person comes up and talks to you and you're not sure why, that you really need to be...
Oh, like me?
Yeah. I wasn't
yeah, you weren't going
to
say that.
Specifically, no.
I've had some trouble getting access with which, I mean, is good.
Well, you shouldn't be allowed to just walk into a player's tent. No.
No, yeah. No. It is good.
Yeah.
It's annoying sometimes.
Well, you have to report on stuff. Balance between letting media in and who are trying to promote what you're doing and not letting anyone just wander into a player's area. Yeah. So our we hosted the East Asia Cup in Sanno 2 years ago, and we had a roped off players area. Yeah. We had a security man saying, no, you can't just walk into the players' tent during a match. So I mean, we're trying to gradually be more vigilant about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
How's this match going?
8-4.
8-4 balls.
Close finish. Close finish coming up.
Wow. Get two?
No, he might get two.
Yeah, they've scrambled back for two, so he needs...
He's out.
Oh, he's out. It's going to be...
7-3.
Gonna need six off the last ball.
I'm gonna have to
get ready, Jerry.
Yeah,
go with my warm-up.
Yeah, you guys are gonna head off. Thanks for chatting.
Nice questions.
Yeah, no worries.